that splendor yield. Listen, listen to the voice of
God. Oh, Mr. Ladislaw, if you were to carry out your threat to abandon Middlemarch, who would be left worth singing with?
As you see, the siren song keeps me bound to your will, Mrs. Lydgate. I'm powerless to row away.
London has not half the attractions we can offer you, and it's common knowledge that there's a powerful magnet in this neighbourhood exerting its field of influence.
To be sure, nobody knows that better than you.
It really is a charming romance, like an old tale.
I beg your pardon, what is?
The jealousy of Mr. Casaubon, foreseeing Mrs. Casaubon and a certain gentleman would wish to marry each other if they were able, and laying a plan to stop it. What will the ending be, I wonder?
What do you mean?
You really don't know. Every other person in Middlemarch seems to. Fred told me, and he heard it from old Mrs. Fairbrother.
Heard what?
That Mr. Casaubon left it in his will that if Mrs. Casaubon marries you, she is to forfeit all her property. Never mind. I dare say she likes you better than the property.
Please, say no more about it.
Now you are angry with me. It's too bad to bear me malice. You ought to be obliged to me for telling you.
And so I am.
I expect to hear of the marriage.
Never. You can never hear of the marriage. Where's my hat?
Ladislaw. Rosie. I'm sorry to be late.
Have you dined, Tertius?
I have dined. I should like some tea, please.
Well, of course.
I was just leaving.
The tea is coming. Pray don't go.
Yes. Lydgate is bored.
If Tertius is in one of his horrible humours, there is the more need for you to stay. He will not speak to me all evening.
Yes, Rosamond, I shall. I have serious business to speak to you about.
There, you see, and I have affairs to put in motion. I bid good evening to you both.
Come and sit by me, Rosie. Dear.
Your hair hangs over your eyes like a bear's. Let me smooth it back.
Dearest, I am obliged to tell you what will hurt you. But a husband and wife must face things together. I dare say it has occurred to you already that I am short of money. I've not been able to pay for all the things we had to get before our wedding, and there have been expenses since. It is I who have been in fault. I ought to have seen that I couldn't afford to live this way, but many unexpected things have told against me in my practice. I hid this from you while you were not well, but now we must think about it together. Rosamond.
What can I do, Tertius?
It's necessary for you to know, because I've got to give security for a time. And a man must come to make an inventory of the furniture.
No, I shall ask Papa for the money.
No, Rosie, I insist upon it that your father will not be told unless I choose to tell him. We will speak of this to no one, Rosie. You will promise me.
Mr. Ladislaw, is it? I've been told you were in the town. And I seem to recognise your features, sir.
If you will excuse me, sir.
Was your mother's name Sarah Dunkirk, sir? Daughter of Julia Dunkirk?
Yes, sir, it was. And what is that to you?
No offence, my good sir, no offence. I knew her when she was about your age. But it's your father that you feature, sir. You were a minnow when I met him. Did he get well?
No.
Well, I've been wondering what became of your mother. She ran away from her family when she was a young lass. And I know why.
You know nothing dishonourable of her, sir?
Not a bit. Little too honourable to like her friends. That was it. I know all about them. Father was in a respectable thieving line. High style of receiving house, if you get my drift, sir. So respectable, the wife, Julia, never knew. And since they could afford to send Sarah to a fine boarding school, she didn't realise neither. But soon as she did, she ran away. Hello. Here we are at the Green Dragon. What do you say, Mr. Ladislaw? Shall we turn in and have a glass?
No. I must say good evening.
Oh, well. Suit yourself, proud young gentleman. Ladislaw. Got the name. Seen the man. So, time to have a little chat with my old friend Nick, I think. Another such proud gentleman. But by Jove, the old cat's out of the bag now and won't stop yowling just because gentlemen prefer it quiet, eh?
I was on my way to Lowick Parsonage, Mrs. Garth, to see Mary. I wondered if you had a message for her.
Hello, Fred. Let me wipe the flour off my hands. Will you sit a moment?
I fear you will think that I'm going to be a great deal of trouble to Mr. Garth working for him.
Caleb likes taking trouble.
I know you think me very undeserving, Mrs. Garth, and with good reason. I've behaved worst to the people I love most. But while two men like Mr. Garth and Mr. Fairbrother have not given me up, I don't see why I should give myself up.
Indeed. A young man who threw himself away now and made the sacrifices vain of two such men would be a poor thing.
It will not be so with me, Mrs. Garth, since I have encouragement from Mary that I may win her. You were not surprised, I dare say.
Surprised that Mary has given you encouragement? Yes, Fred, I confess I was surprised. And you made a great mistake in asking Mr. Fairbrother to speak for you.
Did I? He's always been such a friend of ours. I knew Mary would listen to him, and he seemed quite ready to take it on.
Yes, young people are usually blind to everything but their own wishes and seldom imagine how much those wishes cost others.
Cost? Mr. Fairbrother? Do you mean to say, Mrs. Garth, that Mr. Fairbrother is in love with Mary?
And if it were so, Fred, I think you are the last person who ought to be surprised.
I see. You think I'm standing in their way. But Mr. Garth seemed pleased that Mary should be attached to me.
I spoke from inference only. I'm not aware that Mary knows anything of the matter.
I must go, Mrs. Garth. I must see Mary. Excuse me.
Fred! Oh.
Will you brush my hair, Tertius?
Rosamond, look at this. It's Dover's account. I've marked a number of articles which, if returned, would save us £30. I have not marked any of the jewellery.
It's useless for me to look, Tertius. Return what you please. Here are the amethysts you bought for our engagement. This is all the jewellery you ever gave me. You can return what you like of it, and the plate also. I shall go to Papa's when the men come tomorrow.
We cannot leave this thing to servants, Rosie, as a question of pride. We must manage this together.
Very well. I will stay at home.
And I shan't touch these jewels, Rosie. Close the box again. Come. Darling, let us make the best of things. It will only be for a time, I hope. You must forgive me. And let me brush your hair.
You haven't seen my fine new study yet, Fred. Help me carry these drawers in, would you? Pray come too, Miss Garth. I want to show you a stupendous spider I caught this morning in Mother's sitting room. Wait here a minute or two. I'm off to find an engraving which Fred is tall enough to hang for me.
It's of no use whatever I do, Mary. You're sure to marry Fairbrother at last.
Fred! Hush! Let me close the door. Now, what do you mean?
You see everything clearly. You must see this.
I see you're behaving like a fool. And you're ungrateful, too, when Mr. Fairbrother helped you.
You see? Continually a better man. I have no fair chance. I would go at work with a will, writing and everything, if it were not for this.
For this? For what?
This dreadful certainty that I shall be bowled out by Fairbrother.
Oh, you are a fool, Fred, and so ridiculous it's a delight. I should torment you now, I suppose, and let you think someone else besides you makes love to me. Oh, didn't you notice how Mr. Fairbrother left us alone, to be together?
Please tell me you won't ever think of him.
Fred!
Do you really like me best, Mary? Kiss me then.
Fred...
I begged you to come, Mr. Ladislaw, because I have a communication of a very private nature which I desire to make to you. Nothing, I dare say, has been further from your mind than that there have been important ties in the past which connect your history with mine.
No. But lately there has been an infernal man in town who attached himself to my coattails and mentioned my mother by name.
I'm told your mother's name is Sarah Dunkirk, and that she ran away from her family to go on the stage, and that your father died young of a wasting disease. Can you confirm these statements?
Yes, they're all true. These are all private matters, sir. My mother was a very generous, honourable woman.
I allege nothing against her, Mr. Ladislaw. But did she ever mention her mother to you?
She said, I heard her say, her poor mother knew nothing of why she'd run away.
That poor mother was widowed by my employer and became my wife. You have a claim on me, Mr. Ladislaw. Not a legal claim, of course, but one which my conscience recognizes. I was enriched by that marriage, which I would not have been had my wife Julia, your grandmother, discovered the whereabouts of her daughter. The daughter, your mother, is no longer living?
No, I must go.
Please be seated, Mr. Ladislaw. Doubtless you are startled by the suddenness of this discovery, but it is my wish to make amends for the deprivation which befell your mother. I know you are without fortune, and I wish to supply you adequately from capital, a proportion of which would probably have been yours.
I suppose you always knew of my mother's existence, Mr. Bulstrode. I expect you kept silent and kept the money. And this shady fellow who's turned up now, he knew too. Perhaps you wish to pay us both off.
I will not deny you conjecture in some part rightly, and I wish to make atonement. I intend to bind myself to allow you £500 a year during my life and a proportional sum of my capital on my death, though in law I am obliged to none of this, as I say. That is fair, I think.
That's fair, yes. And before I make any reply to your proposition, Mr. Bulstrode, I must beg you to tell me whether this fortune we are both to enjoy comes from a business which was thoroughly dishonourable, fencing stolen goods, indeed.
Sir, you have been listening to a vicious drunk.
Sir, that's true, and is his testimony also true?
The business was established before I became acquainted with it. This is not your concern, sir.
Oh, yes, it is eminently my concern, sir, if the money I'm accepting, which you stole from me before I was born, was already stolen from others.
Whatever mutual accommodation we come to, I must insist you speak of this to no one, Mr. Ladislaw.
Speak of this? I wish I'd never heard of it. My honour was never touched before, you see. It's another's tarnish, but it sticks. My unblemished honour is important to me. I want no stain on my birth and connections, yet it seems there is a stain I can't help. My mother felt it, kept as far away as she could. And so will I. Keep your ill-gotten fortune, sir, and thank you for keeping it until now when I can refuse it. It lies in a man's self that he's a gentleman. You'll be pleased to hear I'm about to quit Middlemarch for London, so you need not threaten me over my silence, sir. Good evening, Mr. Bulstrode.
Mrs. Casaubon, your uncle isn't due back till tomorrow at the earliest, madam.
That's true, Mrs. Kell, but I have some memoranda from a letter of his to copy. If you will open the library, I can work there.
The shutters are open, madam. Mr. Ladislaw is there already, looking for the rest of his sketches and files.
Go in first and tell him I'm here.
Mrs. Casaubon is coming, sir.
Hello, Mr. Ladislaw. Pray, sit down. You can't imagine how glad I am to find you at Tipton.
I didn't think to see you here. I left a message at Lowick Manor today asking leave to call. I'm going away immediately, but I couldn't go without speaking to you first.
I thought we'd parted when you came to Lowick many weeks ago. I only heard today from Sir James and Mrs. Cadwallader that you'd been seen often at... in Middlemarch. I wanted to see you to warn you about false reports... interpreting your behaviour maliciously.
You refer to my attendance at the Lydgate House, no doubt. The world and his wife are ignorant fools. I'm sorry. It's true I've had reasons to delay, but not anymore. I was in ignorance until yesterday of the codicil in my cousin's will, Mrs. Casaubon. When I saw you before, I was dreaming I might come back someday. I don't think I ever shall, Mel.
You wished me to know the reasons.
Yes, of course I wish it. I have been grossly insulted in your eyes and in the eyes of others. I wish you to know that under no circumstances would I have lowered myself by... Under no circumstances would I have given anyone the chance of saying I sought money under the pretext of seeking something else. There was no need of other safeguards against me. The safeguard of your wealth was enough.
I know. It would be very unkind of you to suppose I ever thought ill of you. I am sure no safeguard was ever needed against you.
Good. Right. So... now I must go.
Shall you continue your political career in London?
Oh, I shall work away at the first thing that offers. I suppose one gets a habit of doing without happiness or hope.
What sad words. I'm always being told I speak too strongly at times. Don't you think that you too are
I don't express myself too strongly this time. There are certain things a man can only go through once in his life. This has happened to me while I'm very young, that's all. What I care for more than anything else in the world... is absolutely forbidden me by the things I despise most. Wealth and social convention. I have the rest of my drawings. I must go. The day after tomorrow, I shall leave Middlemarch.
You have acted in every way rightly. Your friendship with Mrs. Lydgate must have been very precious to you, I know, but...
Mrs. Lydgate? But...
Let us shake hands. Please believe I have never done you any injustice... or spoken of you otherwise than with trust. Please remember me.
Why should you say that? As if I were not in danger of forgetting everything else.
Mr. Ladislaw.
We've been careless with small sums, Rosie, and that has mounted up. But I think I see one resource which would free us from a good deal of the present difficulty. I hear young Ned Plimdale is going to be married to Miss Sophie Toller. They're rich, and it's not often a good house in Middlemarch comes vacant. I feel sure they would be glad to take this house from us with most of the furniture and would pay handsomely for the lease. I can employ Trumbull to talk to Plimdale about it. I'm very sorry, Rosamond. I know this is painful.
I could never have believed that you would like to act in this way.
Like it? Of course I don't like it. It's the only thing I can do.
Let us have a sail now and leave Middlemarch altogether.
To do what? My work is here. We should be as penniless anywhere else.
What is the sum we require, Tertius, in order to recover our possessions from these disagreeable people and stay in our house?
More than I'm likely to get anywhere.
Why should you not mention the sum?
Well, at least 600 to set us straight, and 1,000 to set me at ease. But I have to consider what to do without it, not with it.
It's entirely your own doing, Tertius. You offended Captain Lydgate, and Sir Godwin was so kind to me when we were at Qualingham. I'm sure if you showed proper regard to him and told him of your affairs, he would help us. But rather than that, you like giving up your house and furniture to Mr. and Mrs. Ned Plimdale.
Well then, if you will have it so, I do like it. I like it better than begging and making a fool of myself. Understand then that this is what I like to do.
Please take a seat, Mrs. Lydgate. How can I assist?
I believe my husband called on you this morning to speak about disposing of our house, Mr. Trumbull.
Yes, ma'am, he did. He did so.
I was going to Mr. Plimdale's this afternoon.
I have already been to see Mrs. Plimdale, and she tells me that Ned and Sophie have as good as taken Mr. Hackbutt's house in St. Peter's Place.
St. Peter's Place? A very good area.
So I told Mrs. Plimdale. And now Mr. Lydgate would be annoyed if his orders were to be fulfilled uselessly. And besides that, there are other circumstances which render the proposal unnecessary.
Very good, Mrs. Lydgate, very good. I am at both your commands. Whenever you require service of me, the affair shall go no further.
So you see, Mr. Lydgate, my health and future plans concur to force my hand with regard to giving up my personal share in the management of the hospital. The initial plans, as you know, were ones I had much at heart, under submission to the divine will. But since providential indications demand a renunciation from me, I must renounce. I have spoken to Mrs. Casaubon as to whether she would like to take my place in view of her recent most generous contribution to our funds.
And what did Mrs. Casaubon say?
That it depends on what you can tell her. I thought it only fair to give you prior notice of my decision, since we have worked together in this business as partners in vision.
I'm much obliged to you. May I speak frankly?
Please.
The highest object to me is my profession. I identified the hospital with the best use I could at present make of my profession. But it, and other causes, have made me unpopular. Best use does not always mean monetary success, as you perhaps have discovered in this enterprise. To be brief, I have slipped into money difficulties which I can see no way out of unless someone who trusts me and my future will advance me the sum of £1,000 without other security.
I am grieved, though I confess not surprised by this information. My advice to you, Mr. Lydgate, would be that instead of involving yourself in further obligations and continuing a doubtful struggle, you should simply become a bankrupt. It will be a trial, but trial, my dear sir, is sometimes a needed corrective.
Thank you. I have occupied you too long. Good day.
Enter. Mr. Garth, how may I be of assistance to you?
Just come away from Stone Court, Mr. Bulstrode.
You found nothing wrong there, I hope. Abel has done well with the lambs this year.
Why, yes. There is something wrong. A stranger who is very ill, I think. He wants a doctor, and I came to ask your permission to send Mr. Lydgate. His name is Raffles. I picked the poor wretch up on the road, and he told me he was going to see you.
I am exceedingly obliged to you, Mr. Garth.
I shall give instruction to Mr. Lydgate then, shall I? I asked him to wait outside.
If you would be so kind. And do you have any other business with me about the estate?
I wish to say, Mr. Bulstrode, that I must request you to put your business into some other hands than mine. I'm obliged to you for your handsome way of calling me in about Stone Court, but I must give it up.
You have been led to this, I apprehend, by some slanders concerning me uttered by that unhappy creature. That is a poor reason to give up a connection beneficial to us both, I think.
I'm obliged to believe this. Raffles has told me the truth, sir, and I can't be happy working for you or profiting by you. It hurts my mind.
Very well, Mr. Garth. But I must ask you at least to repeat nothing of the foul speeches you have heard.
That don't signify. If you led a harmful life again and kept others out of their rights by deceit to get more for yourself, I dare say you repent. It's not for me to make it harder for you.
But you do make it harder, turning your back on me.
That I must do, I am sorry.
I demand your solemn oath before you leave that you will not slander me.
I've said as much already. Why would I say so if I didn't mean it? I'm in no fear of you. Such tales would never tempt my tongue. I wish you good day, Mr. Bulstrode.
Lydgate, can I speak with you a moment?
Let me just take this shot.
Damn. What is it, Fred? Fairbrother's just sent up a message to say he wants to speak to me.
Very good.
He's below now. Fairbrother.
Yes?
I thought you might like to know he was there. if you had anything to say to him.
No. No, I have nothing particular to say to him.
Explain like that.
But the game's up. I must be going. I came in just to see Chichley. Swap my horse for a cheap hack, you know.
Pay up and let's go, Lydgate. Chichley's over there making the row. I don't think he's ready for business. Come down with me to Fairbrother. I expect he's going to blow me up. You can shield me.
Fairbrother, how'd you do?
Lydgate. Fred mentioned you were in the billiard room.
Even a professional man must have his fun, I hope. What time are you, Fred?
After 11.
Rosie will be anxious. Good night, Fairbrother. Fred?
I've never seen Lydgate the worse for drink before.
I think it's more than drink, Mr. Fairbrother. His eyes have that look I've seen when fellows take opium.
You did well to fetch him out. We shall speak to no one of this, Fred.
No one shall hear a word of it from me.
I must... Later I shall try a talk with him. To see such despair in such a man, it grieves me beyond words. So, now, Fred, you've been going to the billiard room then yourself. You'll wear out Garth's patience before too long, and then Mary's. You must know by now, Fred, that the satisfaction of your affections stands in the way of mine.
I can't be expected to give Mary up, Mr. Fairbrother. But if she's starting to compare us, I know I'm done for.
Yes. If I let you go to the dogs, I could reap the benefit. Remember that, Fred. I shall not be selfless enough to warn you again. You had better prove worthy of her, or your loss will be my benefit.
You shame me, Mr. Fairbrother. I will try to be worthy of you as well as Mary.
That will do, then. Goodbye, Fred, and God bless you.
Good night.
Ah, Mary Garth. To think of the part one certain woman can play in the lives of two men. That to renounce you requires a very good imitation of heroism, and to win you requires a sober discipline worthy of the saints. Fair brother, you're a poor old fool.
There is a letter for you from Qualia.
Huh? My Uncle Godwin.
I have always told you, Tertius, that it is wise to tell one's troubles to one's relations. Else how will they know when they might be able to...
Rosamond, it will be impossible to endure life with you if you will always be acting secretly, acting in opposition to me and then hiding your actions.
What is the matter? What does he say?
Dear Tertius, don't set your wife to write to me when you have anything to ask. It is a roundabout, wheedling sort of thing which I would not have credited you with. As to my supplying you with £1,000, here, read the rest yourself. Will this be enough to convince you of the harm you do by your meddling? I had nearly resolved on going to Qualingham. It would have cost me pain enough to do it, yet it might have been of some use. But it has been of no use for me to think of anything. You've always been counteracting me secretly. If you mean to resist every wish I express, say so and defy me. I shall at least know what I'm doing then.
I have only wished to prevent you from hurrying us into wretchedness without any necessity.
Dover's agents are coming to the house tomorrow to remove the goods we wrote down as security.
Papa and Mama wish me to go and stay with them. Do you object, Tertius?
Do as you like.
I see you do not wish me to go. Why can you not say so without that kind of violence? I shall stay until you request me to do otherwise. I have always done my duty as a wife should. It is so very hard to be disgraced here among the people I know and to live in such a miserable way. I wish I'd died with the baby.
Yes.
Excuse me, sir. There's a message, sir. It's urgent. From Mr. Bulstrode.
Oh. Poor wee little Nip.
I have asked you to come again because I fear he has become much worse, Mr. Lydgate.
Let me see.
Oh, thank you, sir.
A most unfortunate man who was once in my employment many years ago. Being destitute, he has a claim on me. I believe he is seriously ill. Apparently, his mind is affected and has been wandering into slanderous fantasy.
I won't be picked off like a man.
I feel bound to do the utmost for him. It's a serious case, I apprehend.
Yes.
Married.
And no.
Married.
He had a robust constitution to begin with, but he has thoroughly abused it. I shouldn't expect the attack to be fatal, but we must be very watchful.
I myself am staying here to attend him. Mrs. Abel, the housekeeper, assists me.
He has passed onto a worse stage, but it could be a crisis. He could then recover in his own good time if we do not give him liquor of any sort, however he screams for it. Let him recover himself.
Your quarterly payments don't suit me. I like my freedom. Tell you what, Nick.
You were saying, Dr. Lydgate.
Give a brandy and I'll
more
go
harm
on a bribe.
Can be done in these cases by treatment than by the disease. Give him 5 drops of this opium mixture every 3 hours. That's all. I'll come again tomorrow morning.
You look ill yourself, Mr. Lydgate. I fear you are harassed.
Yes, I am. I mentioned to you yesterday the state of my affairs. Execution has since been declared on my house. I must return home and join my wife before the bailiffs arrive. Good morning.
Wait, Mr. Lydgate, wait. I was taken by surprise by your words yesterday and saw the situation superficially. You said, I think, that £1,000 would suffice entirely to free you from your burdens and enable you to recover a firm stand.
Yes.
If you will wait a moment, Mr. Lydgate, I will draw you a cheque to that amount. I am aware that help to be effectual in these cases should be thorough.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Rosamond! Oh, my dear. Look, the sum we need. We have friends, after all. We shall recover, Rosamond. Dearest, we will be happy, and I will do good after all.
Oh, Tertius! And Will Ladislaw wrote to ask if he might visit us soon. Well, now we can have a dinner party for him, can we not?
Yes, dear, once in a while we can have a dinner party. But, oh, let me hold you, Rosie. All will be well. The worst has happened and is over.
Mr. Bulstrode, sir. Should I have no brandy or nothing to give the poor creature? He's sinking away, he says, and nothing else will he swallow, only the opium. I think he might die, sir. Sir, it's no time to spare when people are at death's door, sir. Sir.
Here is the key to the cabinet, Mrs. Abel. Do as you think best.
God bless you, sir.
When did this change begin, Bulstrode?
I didn't watch him myself last night. I was overworn and left him under Mrs. Abel's care. She said that he sank to sleep between 3 and 4 o'clock. When I came in before 8, he was as you see him now. Is there anything...
It's all over. I suppose I may have been wrong about the strength of his own powers. I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do.
Bulstrode's to let go his hold on the hospital, you know. It's to be discussed at the next meeting.
That reminds me. Do you know how Bulstrode came by his fortune, Ollie?
No, Monsie. Do you?
Got it from a bragging fellow I found in a ditch and gave a right to t'other day. Old chum of Bulstrode's, he swore. Can tap him any time. Knows all his secrets.
Chicksley, over here, man.
Yeah?
Listen to this. What's the man's name, Monsie? Where can he be found?
I left him at the Saracen's Head. Name's Raffles.
Raffles? I furnished his funeral yesterday. He was buried at Lowick. Mr. Bulstrode paid and followed the coffin. Very decent funeral.
What? Where did the man die?
Stone Court.
Did any doctor attend him?
Aye, Lydgate.
So go on now, Momsey. What was the story this fellow told you about our friend Bulstrode?
I'm very grateful to you, Lydgate, for accepting my invitation.
And I'm very grateful, fair brother, that you're so forgiving as to send for me. I was so uncouth when we met last, I'm afraid.
You seem much more cheerful now. But how are you? I'd heard something which made me rather anxious about you.
You mean that there was an execution on the house, I imagine?
Is it true?
It was true, but the danger's over, the debt's paid. I hope now to start afresh on a better plan.
I'm so glad to hear that. May I ask you one question, though, my dear fellow? You haven't, in order to pay your debts, incurred another debt which will bite the worse in the future.
There's no reason why I shouldn't confess it to you. The person to whom I am indebted is Bulstrode. He says he can afford to wait for repayment.
Well, that is generous. He must understand, then, how working for him has reduced your salary instead of adding to it.
You're thinking you once told me to steer clear of obligations to him. I have made a great many mistakes, fair brother, but I shall be all right now.
Mr. Bulstrode will address the town's new public health board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, we are gathered here today to consider the question of sanitary precautions to be undertaken in the light of the increase of cholera and typhoid in the neighbourhood.
Mr. Chairman, I request I may first be permitted to speak on a question of public feeling, which everyone here regards as preliminary.
That's right.
Pressing.
Continue, Mr. Hawley.
Mr. Chairman. I speak for everyone here, I think, when I say that Mr. Bulstrode should be called upon, and I do now call upon him, to resign public positions, which he holds not simply as a taxpayer, but as a gentleman among gentlemen.
That's right!
There are acts which the law cannot visit, Mr. Chairman, though they may be worse than many things which are legally punishable. I call upon Mr. Bulstrode publicly to deny and confute the scandalous statements made severally against him by a man now dead and who died in his house. Or else to withdraw from positions which could only be allowed to him as a gentleman among gentlemen.
I protest before you, sir, as a Christian minister, against the sanction of proceedings towards me which are dictated by virulent hatred.
That, sir, is not a denial.
Now, those who are hostile to me will believe any libel uttered by a loose tongue. Sensual men regard this life above the next.
If you mean me, sir, I repudiate your canting, palavering Christianity. I call upon you and any man here to the inspection of my professional life. Can you say the same? Again, I call on you to enter into explanation of your conduct or withdraw.
Mr. Bulstrode, it is not desirable, I think, to prolong this discussion any further. With regret, sir, I must call on you to quit the room until you can clear yourself of these unhappy aspersions and avoid further hindrance to business.
Mr. Bulstrode appears to need assistance to rise, Mr. Lydgate. And I know, sir, how I, for one, shall interpret your attendance on him.
And I shall not desist from helping him on that account, Hawley. Sir, take my arm.
Well, my dear, we have just come from a meeting at the town hall. A sanitary meeting, you know. And I've got Mr. Fairbrother to come with me to see you.
Mrs. Casaubon.
Mr. Fairbrother. Was Mr. Lydgate there? I want to see him.
Oh, my dear. We've been hearing bad news. Bad news, you know. It's a great shock. It seems there's been underhand plots, doubtful practices, that sort of thing. There has been a great uproar in the town against Bulstrode and Mr. Lydgate.
Mr. Fairbrother, you must know this is nonsense. You don't believe that Mr. Lydgate is guilty of anything base. I will not believe it. Let us find out the truth at once and clear him.
It's a delicate matter, Mrs. Casaubon. I think his friends must wait till they find an opportunity. It is possible, I've often felt so much weakness in myself that I can conceive that even a man of honourable disposition, such as I know Lydgate to be, can be tempted beyond endurance in certain circumstances. He may have acted mistakenly. That's the worst I can believe of him.
Oh, how cruel. As a friend, you should want to be the only man in the world to believe in him, should the whole world belie him. Besides, there's his character beforehand to speak for him.
But my dear Mrs. Casaubon, character is not cut in marble. It's something living and changing, and may become diseased as our bodies do.
Then it may be rescued and healed.
I shouldn't be afraid to ask Mr. Lydgate to tell me the truth, that I might help him.
You can't undertake to manage a man's life for him, you know, my dear. Lydgate must know how he stands. He must act for himself.
The strongest need help sometimes, and he has always helped others. I am to take Mr. Bulstrode's place at the hospital. What better opportunity in the world for me to ask for Dr. Lydgate's confidence? He would be able to tell me things that will make the circumstances clear. Then you could all decide to stand by him, Mr. Fairbrother. Clear in the knowledge of his innocence, I stand by him already. I despair of a world where people glorify all sorts of bravery, except the bravery they might show on behalf of their nearest neighbours.
You speak with great ardour and great goodness, but I do think it would be better, even so, to wait.
Yes, yes, my dear. You know how easily you can go too far if you let ideas run away with you, putting money into schemes, then finding they can't be done, and so forth.
Lydgate must be exonerated, and soon, if we count ourselves his friends. I will wait, but only for a little while.
Rosamond, lay down your sewing, dear. Rosie, have you heard anything that distresses you?
Yes.
What have you heard?
Everything, I suppose. Papa has told me.
That people think me disgraced?
Yes.
And what do you think, Rosie? Rosamond.
Surely, Tertius.
Well?
Surely now you have given up the idea of staying in Middlemarch. I cannot go on living here. Let us go to London. Papa and everyone else says you had better go. Whatever misery I have to put up with, it'll be easier away from here. Tertius! Tertius, where are you going?
I've wished very much to see you for a long time, Mr. Lydgate, about the hospital. I know the venture's success depends on your participation.
You want to decide whether you should give your generous support, Mrs. Casaubon. And I can't conscientiously advise you to do so in dependence on any activity of mine. I may be obliged to leave the town.
Not because there is no one to believe in you. I've heard the unhappy mistakes about you. I knew them from the first moment to be mistakes. You have never done anything vile. You would not do anything dishonourable.
Thank you.
Let me help you. I beg you. When my husband's illness began, you answered my cry for help. You understood. And you rescued me from the brink of despair. Do you remember? And we became fast friends. There is no greater thing, Mr. Lydgate.
Mrs. Casaubon, I should like to tell you everything. It will be a comfort to me to speak where my innocence needs no assertion, God knows. But I don't want to bear hard on Bulstrode, who has lent me money of which I was in dire need, though I would rather have gone to perdition than take it, now I know what I know. Fairbrother warned me, always, to steer clear of Middlemarch intrigues, and particularly of Bulstrode's affairs. Even he must suspect me now.
Mr. Fairbrother will believe me when I have your story, and my uncle, and Sir James Chettam. There are many in Middlemarch to whom I could go, and although they don't know much of me, they would believe me. I would take any pains to clear you. There's little enough I can do in the world.
I'm not even sure of my own innocence.
Let me make it clear before you speak. I know you are not in any way guilty.
My conscience is uneasy about the man who died at Stone Court. Hawley sent someone to examine the housekeeper, and she gave the patient all the opium in the phial I left, as well as a good deal of brandy. That would have been the prescription of many first-rate men, but it was strictly against my orders to Bulstrode. However, the suspicions against me are grounded in money, that Bulstrode had strong motives for wishing the man to die, and that he gave me the money as a bribe to concur in some malpractice against the patient. I'm simply blighted, you see, Mrs. Casaubon,
like a damaged ear of corn.
Oh, it's so difficult. Vindication's an unhappy thing. I know how much good you meant to do. I remember when you first told me about the hospital.
Yes. I had some ambition then.
We must keep the hospital according to the present plan, and the evil feeling towards you will gradually die out.
You have the goodness as well as the money to carry your plan through, and nothing galls me more than the thought of turning round and running from this slander. But why not tell you? You who know all about what sort of a bond marriage is. You'll understand everything. It's impossible for me now to do anything, to take any step, without considering my wife's happiness. She married me without understanding in the least what she was going into, and it would have been better had she not.
I know. I know. You could not give her pain.
And she has set her mind against staying. She wishes to go.
But when she saw the good that might come of staying...
She would not see it. Besides, I have lost all taste for life here myself.
May I go and see Mrs. Lydgate? Would she accept my sympathy? I would tell her I believed in you, that many would believe in you, and it would cheer her heart. Will you ask her if I may go to see her? I did meet her once.
I'm sure you may. Rosamond would feel honoured. Cheered, I think.
And you will think again about continuing with me at the hospital?
No. There must be no wavering. No. Let the new hospital join with the old infirmary, and everything go on as it might have done if I'd never come to Middlemarch. Let the seas close over the shipwreck. God bless you, Mrs. Casaubon, but I'm not the man to benefit by your goodness. I can't sink to the degradation of being pensioned for work I never achieved. No, I must do as other men do and think what will please the world and bring in money. Set up in a watering place where there are plenty of idle rich and dispense the harmless trash to them that our Middlemarch worthies always crave.
That is not brave.
No, it's not brave. It's a creeping paralysis. It's my life. Please, when you talk to the others, don't mention the disobeying of my orders. That would soon get distorted, and Bulstrode's life is hanging by a thread. Only repeat my own report of myself. And you will do me that other great kindness and see my wife?
Yes, I will. I remember how pretty she is. I hope she will like me.
Mrs. Lydgate, Rosamond, don't cry.
Tertius frightens me. He cares for nothing anymore. Oh, Will, if you could have been here to see the dreadful things, why did you leave?
I left for my own reasons. Here. Let me wipe your eyes, and then you...
Mrs. Casaubon!
Excuse me, Mrs. Lydgate. The servant didn't know you were in the drawing room and was just putting me here to wait while she went in search for you. She didn't know you had a visitor. Mr. Ladislaw, how do you do? I called to deliver an important letter for Mr. Lydgate, which I wish to put into your own hands. I will leave it on this table, shall I? Thank you. Good day.
Will.
Don't touch me.
You can easily go after Mrs. Casaubon and explain your preference.
Go after her? Do you think she would turn to look at me or value any word I ever uttered to her again? Explain! How can a man explain anything at the expense of a woman's honour?
You can tell her what you please.
Well, you think she would like me the better for sacrificing you? She isn't a woman to be flattered because I make myself despicable. God, I had no hope before. Not much, but I had one certainty that she believed in me.
That's gone. She'll think of me as an incarnate insult to her from the first moment we met. Explain. Tell a man to explain how he dropped into hell. Explain my preference. I never had a preference for her any more than I have a preference for breathing. No other woman exists by the side of her. I would rather touch her hand dead than I would touch any other woman's living. I'm sorry, I didn't... I must get out. Go.
If you like.
Ma'am?
Drive on to Freshett Hall.
Yes, Mrs. Casaubon. Hop up.
I shall in this letter lecture you on the virtues of the plastic arts through the medium of poetic metaphor, and then as a postscript compel you to a love of things as they are.
Dorothea, how very bright your eyes are. You're going to do something uncomfortable, I know. Is it about Mr. Lydgate, or has something else happened? Dodo?
Yes, dear. A great many things have happened.
Dear, I wonder what?
Oh, all the troubles of all people on the face of the earth.
Dear me, Dodo, are you going to have a scheme for them?
Darling Kitty, I'm only on my way to have lunch with friends and talk with Mr. Fairbrother about Dr. Lydgate.
The best piety is to enjoy when you can. You are doing the most, then, to save the Earth's character as a beautiful planet. Enjoyment radiates. There's no virtue in misery.
What's the matter, Mother?
I've lost my tortoiseshell lozenge box, Camden.
Is it a great treasure, Mrs. Fairbrother?
Mr. Ladislaw gave it me. A German box, very pretty. But if it falls, it spins away as far as it can.
Oh, well, if it's Ladislaw's present. It was under a fender last time.
Here it is.
Excuse me, Mrs. Casaubon. This is an affair of the heart with my mother.
I must go. I've overtired myself.
You look pale. You must have half exhausted yourself in talking about Lydgate. That sort of work tells upon one after the excitement is over.
Yes.
Let me escort you to your carriage, Mrs. Casaubon. You should go home and rest.
Yes.
What I care for more than anything else in the world is absolutely forbidden me by the things I despise most. Wealth and social convention.
Madam, you are ill.
No. No, let me be. I shall rest, good Tan.
Oh, madam, let me come and help you undress. Let me bring you warm milk.
No, thank you. I prefer to be left alone in my boudoir a while.
You are a poem, my dear heretic cousin-in-law.
Oh. I did love him. Tan, is that you?
Why, madam, you've never been in bed this blessed night. Oh, let me stir the fire.
I feel quite well. Very calm. What kind of day is it? Let me look out the window. There's a man on the road with a bundle on his back. And a woman carrying a baby. And a shepherd with his dog. Working already. Tan, look.
Oh, nothing out of the ordinary, madam.
It's a miracle, Tan. Don't you see? I'm part of that. I can feel the bundle on my back. I can feel the baby on my hip. And I can touch the dog's head as he looks at me and grins. Don't be alarmed, my good Tan. I have slept a little. I'm not ill. I shall be glad of a cup of coffee. And my new dress and bonnet. No more crepe. No more grief. No more mourning. I have a visit to make. And this time it will not be for myself, but for a friend in need.
Oh, I'm so glad you're to dress in colours again, ma'am. If ever anyone looked like an angel, it's you in a neck quilling.
My good Tan, get me some coffee. I must get outdoors to walk with my fellows in the sunshine.
Thank you.
receive me, Dr. Lydgate?
I have no doubt she will, Mrs. Casaubon. If you will be kind enough to come in and let Martha tell her that you're here. Martha?
Sir.
Please, take a seat. You left me a letter yesterday and enclosed within it a cheque for £1,000. I wrote this letter to you last night. When one is grateful for something too good for common thanks, writing is less unsatisfactory than speech. One does not at least hear how inadequate the words are.
Mr. Lydgate, it is I who am the most thankful. I wished so much to do something that would support you, and you've let me take that step. You have consented?
Yes. The cheque is going to Bulstrode today. I'm free of him, and forever in your debt. Ah, Rosie. Mrs. Casaubon has come to see you again. You would like to see her, would you not? I'm going out now to see Mr. Coleman.
I had an errand yesterday which I didn't finish, Mrs. Lydgate. That's why I'm here again so soon. You will not think me too troublesome when I tell you I came to talk about the injustice shown towards Mr. Lydgate.
I shall like to hear anything you have to say to me about Tertius.
The truth is, he knew nothing about this man, Raffles, that he had secrets concerning Bulstrode, and he believed Bulstrode lent him the money because he repented refusing it before. I have told Mr. Fairbrother and Mr. Brooke and Sir James Chettam. They all believe in your husband. That will cheer you, will it not? That will give you courage.
Thank you. You are very kind.
He said he had been feeling very lonely in his trial. But I think he would have borne it all better if he had been able to be quite open with you.
Tertius is so angry and impatient if I say anything.
It was himself he blamed for not speaking. He said he couldn't be happy doing anything which made you unhappy. And so he has refused my proposal that he keep his position at the hospital. Because staying in Middlemarch is painful to you. Marriage is so unlike everything else. There's something awful in the nearness it brings. Even if we loved someone else better than those we were married to, it would be no use. I know it may be very dear, but it murders our marriage, and then our marriage always stays with us, like a murder, and we are weak. I am weak.
You're thinking what isn't true. When you came in yesterday, it wasn't as you thought. Mr. Ladislaw was telling me how he loved another woman, that I might know he could never love me. He said no other woman existed for him besides you. He said he could never explain to you because of me. Now I've told you, and he cannot reproach me any more.
No. He can't reproach you any more.
You have been very good to me. I was very unhappy. I'm not happy now.
But better days will come. Your husband will be rightly valued again, and he depends on you for comfort. He loves you best of all things. The worst loss would be to lose that. And you have not lost it.
Well, Rosie, what do you think of Mrs. Casaubon now you have seen so much of her?
She's very beautiful. If you go to talk to her so often, you'll be more discontented with me than ever.
But has she made you any less discontented with me?
I think she has. How heavy your eyes are, Tertius. And do push your hair back. Here, let me...
Oh, Rosie.
And Mrs. Casaubon says we are to leave Middlemarch. I'm so glad, Tertius. We can begin our lives again, somewhere else.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Mr. Fairbrother, ma'am.
Mrs. Casaubon.
Do sit down, Mr. Fairbrother. I'm attempting, you see, to learn the geography of Asia Minor with these maps. I've decided to run away and become an explorer. Except, I can't seem to tell my Black Sea from my Caspian. Am I wanted for anything? I shall be so glad if I am.
No. Well, yes. I've left a mutual friend in the churchyard.
Mr. Ladislaw. I know he's back in Middlemarch.
He fears he has offended you and has begged me to ask if you'll see him for a few minutes. Will you see him? It's going to rain. See how dark the sky is.
Yes. I will see him. And if there's going to be a storm, you should stay too and take tea.
Another day. See, I have my umbrella. May I use the French windows?
What else could I do? There's nothing else I want to do. Come in, Will.
You think me a fool for coming back so soon to Middlemarch? Well, I've been punished for my impatience.
I'm studying geography. I prefer it to Latin, Greek and art. It's about solid ground.
Mrs. Lydgate sent me a note.
Ah.
To say she had told you of the nature of the scene you walked in on yesterday.
Yes.
And you must know, everyone knows the painful story about my parentage. It's a matter of common gossip now.
I'm sorry.
Bulstrode offered me compensation, you know. I didn't choose to accept an income from such a source. I was sure you would not think well of me if I did. I felt that.
You acted as I imagined you would.
And I didn't think you would let any circumstances of my birth create a prejudice in you against me.
If it were a new hardship, it would be a new reason for me to cling to you. Nothing could have changed me but thinking that you were different, not so good as I believed you to be.
You're sure to believe me better than I am in everything but one. I mean in my truth to you. When I thought you doubted that, I didn't care about anything that was left. I thought it was all over for me and there was nothing to try for, only things to endure.
I don't doubt you any longer.
I hope not. That's why I dared to come.
See how dark the clouds have become and how the trees are beaten about. Come and stand by the window with me. Why did you say you would have had nothing to try for? If we lost our own chief good, other people's good remains, and that's worth trying for.
You didn't feel the misery I felt. The misery of knowing you must despise me.
I felt worse. It was worse to think ill of someone you love.
There's no hope for me. Even if you love me as well as I love you, I shall always be poor. Never be worthy enough to ask your hand, ask you to give up all this for a creeping lot away from your friends and fortune. I meant to go away without a word, and even in this I was weak.
Don't be sorry. I would rather share all the trouble of our parting. So, kiss me goodbye.
Dorothea, my dear, beautiful friend.
Except, we needn't part. I don't mind about poverty. I hate my wealth. We could live quite well on my own fortune. It's too much. 700 a year. I want so little. No new clothes. And I'll learn what everything costs. So, now, Will Ladislaw, say we can marry and leave Middlemarch together, or I shall not be able to bear it. My heart will break, and it has stood so much.
Well, you're all here, you know. That's good. Sad news. I mean, here at home, sad news.
Come, we are longing to know, Brooke. Has the gamekeeper been shot?
Well, it's a trying thing, you know. I'm glad you and the rector are here, Mrs. Cadwallader, and Celia and Chetham. It will annoy you uncommonly, but you see, you have not been able to hinder it any more than I have.
It must be about Dodo.
There's something singular in things. They come round, you know.
For God's sake, what is it?
Dorothea is going to be married again.
Merciful heaven, not to Ladislaw, the pawnbroker's grandson.
Yes, to Ladislaw.
She said she'd never marry again.
You see, Humphrey, I was right. I'm always right.
I should have called him out a year ago and shot him.
Really, Chetham?
It must be admitted that his blood is a frightful mixture. The Casabon cuttlefish fluid to begin with, and then a rebellious Polish fiddler, and
nonsense,
then...
Eleanor. Time for us to go.
But after all, he is a pretty sprig. Like a fine old Critchley portrait before the idiots came in.
I'll go with you, Cadwallader. You must all come and dine with me tomorrow, you know. Eh? Celia, my dear?
We will. James, won't we?
Oh, of course, if you like. That is to say, if I'm not to meet anybody else.
Mary?
Ed! Oh, what fine clothes you wear, you extravagant youth.
That's too bad. Just look at the edges of my cuffs. It's only by dint of brushing I look respectable at all. I'm saving my good suit for our wedding. This one will last 2 years.
Married in 2 years? Be reasonable, Fred. Such flattering expectations.
Mary, if you've got something discouraging to tell me, I shall bolt. I'm out of spirits already. Rosie is moving from Middlemarch, and Father is so cut up. Home is not like itself. I can't bear any more bad news.
Should you call it bad news to be told you were to live at Stone Court after all and manage the farm?
That's nonsense, Mary, isn't it?
My father told me just now, and he never talks nonsense. You are to manage it for your Aunt Bulstrode. She's in charge now. My uncle is so ill and broken, and she wants to help us. And Father says, with saving, we might gradually buy the stock ourselves, and the land, and in the end, the house.
If this were true, I should be a tremendously good fellow then, Mary, and we could marry at once.
I might like to wait and see if I like someone better.
Don't joke anymore. Tell me, seriously, that all this is true and that you are happy because of it, because you love me best.
All this is true, Fred, and I am happy because of it, because I love you best.
You know, Dorothea, it's very bad. You've disappointed us all so. And how will you live? You'll go away among strange people and I shall never see you. And you won't see little Arthur grow up, and I won't see your children.
Dearest Celia, if you don't see me, it won't be my fault.
Yes, it will. James can't bear it. He says you're wrong, and you always are wrong. Only I can't help loving you.
Bless you, Kitty. Take comfort. Perhaps James will forgive me one day.
Is Mr. Ladislaw very fond of you, Dodo?
I hope so. I'm very fond of him.
I cannot think how it all came about. Can you tell me how it happened?
I dare say not. You would have to feel it with me each step of the way. And it's not a remarkable story, you know. Quite ordinary, after all.
Not as you planned, Dorothea.
Not as I planned. I might have done better if I'd been better. But this is what I'm going to do, Celia. With all my heart.